Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. Neil Kaplan specializes in playing some outrageous villains like Emperor Zarkon from Voltron and Madara Uchiha in Naruto. But in reality, he's one of the nicest and funniest guys you'll meet. It may or may not surprise you to find out that Neil actually got his start in comedy. So I want to welcome you all and welcome Neil to Allison's Wonderland. My name is Allison Packard and I'm your host. Hey, Neil, how's it going?
Well, I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, I'm so happy that you're here. Yes. Cheers. Welcome.
I can't believe that I'm included amongst your rather notable celebrities that you've had on here.
You are one of the greats.
You're slumming this week.
You are one of the greats, Neil.
Oh, stop it.
You've been working in cartoons and animation for a long time. Care to tell us about your very first gig? Do you even remember?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was studying musical theater in New York City.
Is that where you grew up?
No. I grew up in Northern California.
Okay.
I was at USC and didn't quite fit in with the cool kids down there.
Savvy.
And so I decided to do a little reset and decided to study musical theater. I loved musical theater. Unfortunately, it's like I could act, I could sing, I couldn't dance. The nice thing is I'm starting to get to the age of the characters I used to play.
Oh,
when
you're,
I was
you're
a kid.
You can dance now because TikTok is teaching you how.
No, I can't dance, but I can play the old guys in the show that don't dance.
Nice.
You know,
theater, here you come, Broadway.
Yes, you know what? My wife and I are looking to buy a house back east. And I said, when that happens, I'll probably go back to some acting classes.
Oh, I love that.
And it's funny because a friend of mine is the musical director of Mr. Saturday Night with Billy Crystal on Broadway right now.
Oh, wow.
And so I've gone to see it twice. And so my friend said, you should do it because there really isn't as much competition as there used to be.
Hey now, perks of getting older.
And the reason is, and I said, let me guess, because by the time guys get to be my age, if they're not booking, they're dropping out. They're quitting. They're moving on to something else. Yeah. Sure.
They're moving on to voice acting, actually.
Hopefully, because then I'll have students when I start teaching back in New York.
Totally.
But and it's funny because when I go to high school reunions, people see me and they go, you look the same. And I'll say, no, this is just how I used to make myself up every couple of weeks so for a different show. And the lines happen to be in the same place that I used to draw them. So,
So you started in theater and then what made you move back to Hollywood?
I ended up meeting a disc jockey in New York and I did a bunch of drop-ins for his show, you know, celebrity impressions, which I stopped doing.
Billy West.
Yeah, but Billy's good. and I stopped doing them because I met Mel Blanc.
Oh.
And Mel Blanc said to me, he said, impressions are for hacks, kid. Original characters. So I kind of stopped doing that. And I've gotten back to it a little bit, as you might have seen on TikTok with some of the things
people
that I
love impressions on the internet.
And it ends up, I do a couple of them fairly okay. And some of them I love to do. You know, I'll drop in a Norm MacDonald at the drop of a hat. Let me tell you. No, it's really, you know, it's not a big thing there, you know. It's like, I was saying the other day, I was talking to Satan. And so anyway, I drop into it.
Great.
It's just fun. So yeah, I came back to Northern California because I was auditioning for musicals as a young man in my early 20s and not getting anything.
Yeah.
And so I came back and I started studying musical theater and I signed with an agent and my first job was helping to develop cardiac sonogram technology.
Riveting.
I was a model heart.
Oh.
Yeah, I was a heart model. That was like my first job as an actor.
I knew you had good heart.
Yeah. So, and then I took a workshop with Sue Blue the whole weekend started with, well, you know, you should study and take your time and in a few years, perhaps think about moving to LA. By the end of the weekend, we recorded Thumbelina a few times and I think I played like 8 different characters. And so she said, so when you get down to LA, let me know and I thought that was like the sign of approval. And I came rushing down and picked up a drama log one day. And they were looking for voices for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers season 2.
Oh, my God.
And I sent in my tape, and that's where I
started working. Oh, that's a pretty big show to just bump into.
Well, I mean, look, it was a neighborhood kind of a thing, basically, you know, and I'm still friends with people that I met doing that show 25 years ago. So, and I've basically, I'm one of those actors. I've cobbled things together. I've never had a regular gig. Mm-hmm. I've never been the spokesperson for anything. I've never, even my characters that have had decent runs on shows have never been regular enough for me to like even get my feet settled on the ground. So I'm one of those, you know, just slapping things together day at a time and look back and now it's 25 years. I'm going, oh, okay, I'm still here.
But these are the stories we need to hear, because this is more the reality of a career as a voice actor than, you know, the few and far between that have those monumental, when you are Miley Flanagan as Naruto, or you have that iconic character, which everybody craves.
I'll tell you what, with Madara Uchiha and Naruto, it's really interesting because, you know, I liken it to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was a kid in the 70s watching the syndicated reruns and loving it. And I enjoyed Star Wars, but I was one of those kids who actually wrote letters to Paramount saying, Star Wars is great. When are we going to get a Star Trek movie? And then we got it. And, you know, it's like Naruto, you had your original fans. And then there were people who, during the pandemic, when things were locked down.
Sure, Netflix.
But the old ones haven't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. They haven't migrated to other places. They have other things that they love as well, but they still love this show.
Yeah.
And so the fan base has just gotten larger and larger to the point where we had a reunion panel at Anime Riverside, which was outdoors. I mean, there must have been like 2,500 people that were like in this courtyard and spilling up on the hills and like on the walkways of the building. And it was just wild. And of course, you know, when you do an anime, you may have a really large cast, but it doesn't mean you ever meet any of these people.
True.
So people were asking, you know, who is your favorite to work with? It's like, I've never worked with any of these people. As a matter of fact, this is the first time that these 11 people have ever been on the same stage at the same time or ever been in the same room. It's like, you guys go ahead and talk to each other. We're gonna talk to ourselves. It's like, I could have spent an hour just interviewing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like to do sometimes at conventions, if I'm doing a Q&A or a panel and people don't have questions, especially a panel, I'll ask my fellow panelists questions. I'll interview them. And a nice pronunciation, interview them. That's
interview
nice
them.
Yes.
Yes.
Interview them. Yeah. There we go. A little Christopher Walken pronunciation.
Can you do your voice for us?
Which?
For Naruto.
Oh, Madara Uchiha is basically me. It's a change in attitude. That's about
but
it.
But lower.
Oh, not necessarily. It's
less musicality to your voice.
It depends on what's going on.
Mm.
Because he is one of those characters that is sometimes so taken with his own power that he enjoys listening to his own voice.
Typecast again?
No. Not at all. I was actually, they cast me, they had the original Japanese voice actor and they brought me in and played it for a couple of minutes and gave me a line number. It said, do that. I guess they were hearing a similarity between the Japanese actor and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to base a lot of what I was doing off of a little bit of the musicality of what he was doing. And the interesting thing was when the character first showed up, he inhabited other bodies, basically. So he had a mask over his face. It's one of these things like a soap opera. So for the first couple of years, I didn't have to worry about lip syncing. So I could act in the role.
That's amazing.
And that was my favorite thing. It was like, then the mask came off. It's like, oh, now I got to match the flaps.
Yeah.
But I spent a couple of years. And so my big thing with that character, and if you go back, if fans of the show can go back and listen for this, but I took out as many contractions as possible.
Oh.
I changed as many didn'ts to did nots, could not. I just said, this is a character who does not want to shorten what they have to say.
He's in no rush.
He is in no rush, absolutely. And whether it was, I'm going to force you to listen to me, It's that old theory of powerful people, powerful character, don't have to yell. And like, I'll tell my students this sometimes, I'll say, you know, have a conversation with somebody and then before you know it, just start lowering your volume and just see what happens. And basically, if you do it right, you'll make people lean in because you're forcing them to listen. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, so a powerful character doesn't need, somebody who's sure of themselves doesn't necessarily need to push that out there all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times when they get quieter. That's why, you know, sometimes the biggest time to fear a villain is when they get quiet.
And you were also a villain on Voltron.
Yes.
I was curious, did you watch the original Voltron at any point in your life?
I did not.
Were you a fan?
And as a matter of fact, the first session that I went in, I asked and they specifically said, no, if you haven't watched it yet, do not watch it. We do not want any element of that. And we like what you did in your audition and that's the direction we want to go in. Please don't color it. Now, interestingly enough, the original Zarkon was played by Jack Angel, our late dear friend. And I got to know Jack a little bit during the course of a few years. And he sent me an email that was basically, hey, I've heard through the grapevine that they're bringing Voltron back. Some fans have put together a petition to get me playing the role of Zarkon again. And so I'm sending out this invitation to my friends and colleagues to sign. And it's like,
didn't know
I can't really sign that, Jack. I love you, but yeah, it's mine now.
Oh.
Yeah, so yeah, but yeah, I never got the chance to tell him that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he figured it out.
Absolutely. He had dozens and dozens and dozens of things.
Yep.
And I'm sure he would have kindly shared the role. And besides, he was King Zarkon. Mm. I was Emperor Zarkon.
Ah.
I got the upgrades.
Is that an upgrade?
King to Emperor? Yes. I think so.
Technically?
I think so.
Okay, it's not just a
it
different...
It sounds better.
Sounds
better.
It sounds
think?
More you, for sure. Yeah, King sounds a little
I'll be a king.
Or something. I mean, you know, I'd take it.
I wouldn't say no.
No. Yeah, exactly. Now, you worked with the legendary Andrea Romano as the voice director on that show. What was that experience
I actually
like?
Worked with her twice.
Oh, what was the first time?
The first time was on a video game called StarCraft II.
Oh.
And that was really interesting. And I always tell people that if you're hearing voiceover that you don't like, or you're hearing voiceover that you do like, you're hearing the direction, you know? To hear some of the scenes that we did in StarCraft II and to realize that we were never in the same room at the same time, I mean, that's all about direction. If the director doesn't set you in the same mind space, in the same physical space and understanding that... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the scene will be horrible, you know, and it's funny because I was at a convention with Robert Clotworthy, who played the lead in StarCraft II, and we were watching the last scene. And this was like a year after the game came out. And like, literally I'm sitting there realizing I was playing things I didn't realize I was playing thanks to the direction that she gave me, you know? And so certainly then transitioning over and working with her with the full cast on Voltron was just amazing, you know, because certainly when you're doing a video game and you're all alone, you don't get the time to sit back and watch or listen to the director working with somebody else or hear the effect that they have on other talent. It's like I tell young voice actors or people who are new to the business how valuable taking workshops with other actors is, because if you only do solo stuff, you don't really give yourself the chance to fully learn.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to have your brain monitoring what you're doing.
Yeah.
You want your brain fully engaged in the copy, fully engaged in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if any part of your brain is like out there being Statler and Waldorf and watching and judging and doing that, you're doing yourself a disservice. And so when you're in a workshop and you do something and you're not sure what you did, but it felt right, but then you can see another actor get in the booth, work with maybe the same copy or the same direction or anything like that, and then you see their change, so you see the effect that that had, then the learning, I think, it's becomes eye-opening. A bit more complete.
Yeah.
And so...
As well as building community when you're in the class. yeah. and having colleagues that you can call when you are stuck Hopefully, or when yeah. you need advice or a shoulder to cry on.
Absolutely. I mean, I took a class years and years ago just down the street.
Which one?
It was a casting director night through VoiceTracks back when Cindy okay. owned it.
Oh, geez. You're going way
yeah.
back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Back when she was up on the second floor of the two-story place that's still here on Cahuenga.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it may even...
Before my time.
Yeah, I was going to say. But I believe in that class, I believe Debbie Derryberry was in that class. Bob Joles was in that class.
Oh.
Jonathan Cook was in that class. And of course, I sat there and like studied so I could learn how to do the voice of Jonathan Cook next on Fox. Yeah, so I was like...
Nailed it.
So if you can't, you're right. So, yeah, and that was just a real treat. And yeah, you do get to know people but I just think the learning so much more. And so when we were doing Voltron, watching her work with other actors was just absolutely yeah. amazing.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. And then Serena Irwin took over later yeah. when Andrea retired. Yeah. Did you notice a shift or a change?
You know, Serena, she's a wonderful director. I don't think she quite put her stamp on it like she does mm-hmm. on projects that are hers.
Now,
I think she
yeah.
really worked on echoing, you know, the energy of what was there already and trusting the cast a lot, you know, because the characters were already developed, you know? So, I mean, it was a masterwork of following somebody else's example as opposed to, I need to put my stamp on this, you know, which could have drastically altered the energy of the show.
Right. And fans are already used to the tone, right. particular characterization.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. You know, it would be interesting. I would love to work on something similar with her and kind of, you know, feel the difference in her direction. But I thought it was really, it's difficult sometimes to let people do what they do. You know, one of the things that we learn as actors during the years is to lay back, to listen, to trust others. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like somebody who, a younger voice actor, posted something on Twitter about how they were excited because they booked something using their own voice and they were really excited about it. And for those of us who are
character,
do that versatile thing, it can, the hardest thing can be, this is the voice they want, and this is the voice that's okay, and this is the voice that's perfect for the role, as opposed to, you sure you don't want me to make him British or something? Make him older? Smaller? Larger? What do you want? You know, it's yeah. like, I previously left an agent because they said, we want you to send in one take only.
Oh.
For auditions. And I said, I can't do that. For everything, there's a small, medium, and a large. Can I send those in? And then you judge whatever else is going to be submitted through the agency and then pick which one isn't represented, you know, because you'll know. And yeah. doesn't that play? And their response was, you choose. And I said, I got to go somewhere else because that's just not me.
There's so much responsibility on voice actors now with self-direction and breaking down copy without the lines of the other characters and making really strong choices mm-hmm. out of the air. It's definitely, the game has changed a lot.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of voice actors are creating content around their talents. And I feel like you showcase your stuff very good on TikTok.
I do the best I can as an old man. You know, it's like, I look at the stuff you put together. It's like, oh, look at that effect. Look at that wipe. That's really good. Oh, that's great. And I just get terrified of even pressing a button and doing things. That's why my stuff literally is like out of the 1950s. It's like one button, one touch, one thing, you know. But one of the things, again, much like The Voice, you know, I didn't join TikTok for the longest time because I would watch stuff and get intimidated.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't quite realize, no, that's them being them. You just be you, just be you,
yeah.
just be you and be honest and do what you do, including every now and then being a bit of a curmudgeon. I mean, I used to be known as the world's youngest curmudgeon. And now obviously the first part of that, the first part of that ain't true anymore. Now I'm the world's most appropriately aged curmudgeon. So there you go. But then I just kind of did my thing and saw that it was being kind of accepted when, okay, so that that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do me. I'm going to do what I do. It's not technologically that great. And, you know, it's.
But that's the thing. You're showcasing your skills in a great way. Hopefully, and the fans are loving it. Yeah. You're always on my For You page.
Thank you. And I'll tell you what, I still, you know, at conventions when people come up and say something about, you know, oh, I really love what you post on Twitter, or I really love your TikToks. I still kind of trip out at that. It's like, people actually watch.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate it every time they say something. And you don't do this. And I'm very glad. I'm very glad. Some of our friends, some of our colleagues put the same thing up on everything and it drives me crazy. It's like, why do I follow you?
A little bit of that.
Not too much. We have one friend and they work a lot. And this person works a lot. So I don't blame them at all.
Well, it's tough because what performs well on TikTok will not necessarily perform well on Instagram Reels.
Right.
You know, Facebook, I'm not really sure about Facebook these days.
I mean, I said early on Instagram, this is how I view the world. These are the snapshot. And for the longest time, I resisted putting up I put up myself.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't put up professional things, or I didn't put up stuff to pimp shows that I was in, or games I was in, or conventions I was coming to. And then it was like, okay, I think now we kind of have to do that, you know, as a service to people, because it's kind of unfair if I'm doing like
audience
a convention.
Changed.
Well, not only that, but there are people who, you know, like I'm doing these in-store appearances, you know, which are kind of a trip. Those are new, you know, but it's whereas a convention, you kind of like every now and then get a chance to sit down and relax because people are going over to see Mark Paul Gosselaar and say, I loved you, Saved by the Bell, you know, and all that sort of a thing. But when you're in-store, they're just coming to see you.
Wow.
And so it's like doing an audiobook.
Have you done audiobook of conventions? I have. I've done a handful. Maybe a dozen. They're not mine.
But don't you, when you leave that session, does your brain feel a little off? Do you feel a little altered?
It's so intense. And most of the ones that I've done have been in studio, thank God.
Yeah, no, those are the only ones. Those are the only ones that I do.
Yeah.
I can't do the ones alone.
Yeah.
Because I bow down to the actors that do that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I would mess up so many times and I would drive myself crazy listening back to it later and editing.
Yeah.
Because I've got my 1960s version of ADD, you know, he has too much sugar, you know, whatever it was. It was just, I would have a hard time listening to the book and not doing something else.
Yeah.
And when you're editing the book, it's got to be letter perfect. So you can't let your eye wander from the page. Mm-hmm. You can't put a the instead of an even though like if you were doing a commercial, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
If you were doing, you know, animation, they might go, oh, you know what? That works better. Let's keep it, you know, but it's like, no, this has to be every single letter that is typed into the book. And so you focus and you focus and you never get a break because nobody else says any line, you know,
they're already drinking their coffee.
Yeah. And it's just you. And so it's like you read for 90 minutes and 2 hours or whatever, and just kind of walk out. It's like, whoa, real world again.
Audiobooks, kids, they're a blast.
Look,
some people love them. They're great for something.
It beats, you know, like working on the highway, that's for sure. And I enjoy the process of creating, you know, it's just, I'm more of a short form guy.
Yeah.
But the people who do it, again, I mean, it's a different type of skill. It's one of the first things I do when I'm working with a new student who says they're interested in voiceover. I say, okay, great. Give me a list of 50 different places you find voiceover, because I want them to realize, at least for now, while AI is still not in everything yet, but a lot of those avenues, I think, are closing down.
So you do coaching. How do potential students find you?
They beg me because I love to teach. I hate finding students.
Okay.
I hate putting together classes. I hate putting together workshops. I hate doing the adult stuff.
Uh-huh.
I love talking about our art.
Yeah.
It's like one of the things I say about voiceover is, why is voiceover the only art on the planet that it seems people feel the only way to do it is professional? Okay. People want to dance, they would go to a dance class and they take dance classes, or they go to a club and they dance. Okay. Or they would go to the local community theater and audition and be in the chorus or play, you know, Dream Ballet Laurie in Oklahoma or whatever. You want to paint. You don't sit there and go, I'll paint as soon as I have a gallery show. But voiceover, it's like, you know, you can do your own thing on the internet. Mm-hmm. You can create your own podcast.
Now, fan
you can
dubs.
Create your own. You can do fan dubs.
That's how Frank Todaro got his start. John Bailey, a lot of people.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. But the thing is, even if you don't want to jump in this rat race, if you don't want to jump in this game, but you still want to be a voice actor, okay. I grew up in San Jose, California, and we had something called San Jose Civic Light Opera, where we would have mostly locals, and we'd import in a couple of stars from Hollywood. We'd bring up Joanne Worley to play Mama Rose in Gypsy, and then everybody else would be locals. One of the big ones that I remember as a kid, none of your viewers will know these names, but they brought in Bobby Van and Van Johnson to play Mr. Applegate and Joe Hardy in Damn Yankees. And old Joe was played by this guy by the name of Fred Fraboni. And Fred Fraboni was in every show that they did. And Fred Fraboni was great. Mm-hmm. And Fred Fraboni hung with every star from Hollywood. And there was no drop off when they had dialogue together. The only difference was Fred Fraboni didn't go to Hollywood and pursue anything because he was a local pest control guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about Transformers.
Okay.
You were the voice of Optimus Prime. 20
years ago.
20 years ago, I mean.
20 years.
There was a show that I grew up with.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I feel so old.
What? No. Do you want to do the voice for us?
Well, sure, I suppose. But you see, it comes down to which version do you want? Interestingly enough, because that was dubbing an anime.
Uh-huh.
And the character had a face mask. Again, very happy about that. But we had two different directors on the show.
Uh-huh.
One worked on the original Generation One with Peter Cullen. And so he had a habit of taking words out, slowing it down. So in those episodes, I tended to sound a bit more like John Wayne, a bit more ponderous and that sort of a thing. So a bit closer to the original Peter Cullen. But in the other episodes, it was directed by an actor who didn't work on the original series, and he would put more words in. And he tended to like him young and charged up and gung-ho. All right, Autobots, let's transform. I'll meet you at the space bridge. That whole sort of a thing. And interestingly enough, they didn't know that was going on until we did a convention a year later. We did a BotCon and somebody asked, why are you different in different episodes? I said, different directors. And they both kind of looked at me and said, why didn't you say anything? I said, I thought it was my job to do what you were telling me to do. Sorry. And then, of course, now there's Peter Cullen currently. What he does for the films, you know, which is a different voice altogether, you know. It's like, which version do you want? You want the version from the theme park? You know, not saying that that was ever me, but. Anyhow.
Wow. So you mentioned conventions. Kind of took a glance at your convention schedule. You have so many cons coming up. Where can our fans go to hear more about where they can find you?
Well, you can check out my website, which hopefully is updated, but sometimes isn't. That's kneecap.net, N-E-K-A-P. Okay. I also post on Instagram, Twitter, and my Facebook fan page is Neil Kaplan Voice Actor.
So, awesome.
Yeah. So I try to let people know because I'm getting out and about as much as possible.
Yeah.
Riding this delicious wave of Naruto love.
Is that where most of your fan base comes from?
These days, it sure seems like it. Yeah. I mean, well, but it's interesting because, you know, every now and then somebody will come up on TikTok and go, I think of you as I narrated a series of YA books called I Am Number Four. And the first book was made into a movie. So that always is interesting when people know me from doing the books that they grew up listening to.
Yeah.
And then there are some people that know me from Skylanders. And then there are some people who know me from Destiny 2, you know. And I think my specialty tends to be delicious villains, people with power, or creatures with power, if so it might be, you know? So it's like, I basically, my spread at conventions, I have so many different pictures because there's so many different possible things that people might love.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, certainly Madara Uchiha has lapped the field recently, you know, over the last couple of years with people watching that show and during lockdown.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes fun trying to figure out.
They're like, where else do I know you're from? They're like looking at your pictures.
Yeah,
like, oh, wait, you're that. Oh, Neil, well, it's been so lovely chatting with you. We'll have to have you back on too.
Anytime.
To chat more about your upcoming graphic novel and all the other amazing things that you have going on. And I'll be sure to include a link to your website for anyone that might be interested in your appearances. Thank you guys so much for tuning into Alison's Wonderland, and we'll be back next week. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to Alison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Alison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.alisonpackard.com. See you next week.